Hawks. Go, 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 go.
Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago is proud of you.
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
Pack show this afternoon. Welcome in. Go until 7 o'clock. Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development. We will also talk to Nick Madrigal, White Sox first-round draft pick last year, and a conversation with Ricky Renteria on the program today. Very busy show. Mark Carmen with you. As we start out going up to Minneapolis, we're Rich King, working with WGN Radio, dominating, covering today's ball game, and I think messing with White Sox outfielders today. Rich King, I'm blaming you for the White Sox defense in the outfield. Would you like to accept blame, please?
I'll be happy to accept the blame and take it off them because I'm sure they feel pretty bad about it. It was a rough day all the way around, Mark. The outfield, each outfielder had a miscue. Of course, the big one by Charlie Tilson, who lost the ball in the wind, I guess, in a kind of a twisting fly ball that resulted in two runs and overthrows, missing the cutoff man by Leary Garcia and Eloy Jimenez, and Tilson and Alonzo missing the pop fly. And you got a pretty messy situation. And this will not go down as one of the better games of the year for the White Sox. But that's the way it goes. Sometimes you have a good day, and sometimes you know this is not a very good day.
I thought that Ricky, after the ball game, he basically said, okay, you guys don't have to ask me any questions to start here. I'll just start answering about our play. But it seemed like he was just trying to be as positive as possible, which is standard for Ricky. But it was almost like he was almost over-giddy to try to, you know, not think about what happened out there today.
Well, managers nowadays never criticize players, rarely criticize a player for the press. I mean, Tony La Russa years ago would never criticize a player, but I guarantee behind the scenes he let him have it. And I'm sure Ricky's in the same genre. I'm sure he didn't like what happened to me. And he told us that they criticized the things on the bench when they were during the game. They pointed things out. You can't miss cutoff, man. You got to catch the fly balls. You got to be alert. So all in all, I think the discipline is there from Ricky, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, the White Sox won two games in Houston, came in at a pretty good high. And the Twins, just a juggernaut. They've had 26 home runs now in the last nine games, of offensive display that really is historic proportions. If they continue on this trend, now it's about 350 home runs for the year, which is shatter last year's mark by the New York Yankees. It's a tough club to play. And the White Sox didn't play well, and that's the 8-1 score.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, Minnesota, I mean, they're sitting at 35-16. The most homers they've ever hit as a team came back in 1963, which was 200 and some odd home runs. And they're on pace for 350, as you put it, Rich. I mean, how good do you think, I mean, when you look at the Twins right now, do you see this is a World Series contender, seeing them up close?
Well, you know what happened to all of a sudden these guys, you know, they've been around for a couple of years, building and building, and the Indians used to dominate that division, and now these guys have matured. You can see it in their batting approach. Eddie Rosario has become a star. Jonathan Schoop has finally come into his own. They've got Cron in there. They got Sano at third base. He's got five homers since he got back. Polanco is an all-star type caliber shortstop, hitting in the 300s. So this is a very good offensive club. They got a couple of good pitchers. Odorizzi is pitching tomorrow, and Gibson pitching today, and then Berrios is in there. And the bullpen, from what I've seen in the two games I've been here, looks pretty solid also. So it's a well-rounded team. The Indians, if they lose today, they'll be nine games behind the Minnesota Twins. That race could be over in July. So this club is really coming on. And, you know, and once you get in the playoffs, as you well know, anything can happen. This club has all the ingredients for sure.
Yeah, Cleveland right now is in a rain delay with Tampa. That game has yet to get underway. But I mean, the Sox are 12 games back, and they've been creeping on the tribe for second place in the division. And so Cleveland, I mean, that's been the biggest surprise slash, I suppose, disappointment so far in the AL Central. Let's go back to that Houston series, Rich. I mean, I've been super impressed with Lucas Giolito pretty much all season long. I thought the five-inning performance with the rain coming down, throwing strike after strike after strike to get the Sox a win against the Blue Jays was impressive. But this was next level. To go up on the road against the Houston Astros and be as nasty as he was, I'm wondering if Lucas Giolito is maybe just scratching the surface of what he could be after that performance.
Well, let's hope he is. You know, I saw him all spring training. We were down there at the webcast games. So every game he pitched, the numbers in Arizona were horrible. But I kept saying this to people, and I'm not no expert on this. Obviously, Ed Farmer and people like that know more, much more than I do. But I thought his stuff was pretty good despite getting hit around a little bit in Arizona. His velocity was up. His arm motion, they changed arm motion a little bit. It was a little faster. Pitches were breaking better. And I thought he had a pretty good go coming in. And sure enough, he's had a pretty good year. So let's hope that is scratching the surface. And that Lopez can turn himself around. That Houston series was a real uplifting thing. They played competitive the first two games and they won the last two. And people thought they were going to get blown out 9-1 or 18-2 or something like that. But they hung in there pretty good. And I think it was kind of a milestone mark. I mean, hanging in there with a team like Houston, a tough four-game series, was pretty good. Now, they're going to build on that. There's still a rebuilding process here, and this is showing it here in Minnesota, no question about that. But I think the things on the upswing, you can see the signs. Now, in baseball, you never know. I said this a million times. I've been in the game long enough to know. You never know what the future is, but you can see this developing with Cease coming on and people like that, and they just mesh this thing together a little next year, they'll be even better. So the signs are positive, but not positive so far this weekend here in Minnesota.
Yeah, well, let's just mention one of those signs being the three homers that Aloy was able to bomb out down in Houston, including easy power the opposite way. He's such an easygoing guy, Rich. I mean, you've covered this game for a while now. Young guy with that sort of demeanor and confidence, it's that you don't see that every single day, correct?
No, I've said that I saw him in spring training the last couple of years, and my standard comment is if this guy doesn't make it, I'd be really shocked. He's got all the tools, he has a great demeanor, and obviously he's way behind what he's going to be. He's a much better player than he's shown, even with the home runs he's hit so far. I think he's going to be fine, and you put him in there with Moncada, who's developing into a star, and Anderson, who's been hurt now, he nicked up his wrist a little bit. And he's going to be out for maybe a game or two, but he'll be back shortly. And, Abreu, you got a pretty good lineup in there. And the offense, I think, will take care of itself. Now, of course, it comes down to pitching. But I think the pitching, they got enough guys now in depth in the organization to put together a pretty good bullpen. And if you get the starting pitching, is the key. You got to get a good, consistent starting rotation going. Rodon was a big setback. They were expecting big things from him this year. But you've got Dylan Cease down there. You've got other people you can bring in. Who knows, next year they'll sign somebody off somebody on the team and make a trade.
Yep.
So it's a rosy picture here down the road, but you're going to have these bumps and bruises like you have this weekend.
Yeah. Rich King up in Minnesota covering the White Sox with us here on 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly with you till 7. Just on your way out here, Rich, anything did you learn about Timmy? You just said it's a day or two there, and
And
Carlos Rodon, too, I'm just curious. He was back with the club after the surgery, sitting in the dugout today.
Well, we talked to Rodon yesterday, first him. Surgery was good. He's anxious to get back as a starter, and he's going to go through rehab. He knows it's a tough road, but he's determined. He's a tough guy. As for Anderson, weird situation yesterday. He got hit by a pitch in the wrist, and it was actually a foul ball. They called it a foul ball. Nobody complained about it, but it did hit his wrist. I guess he got part of the bat also. Held out today. Could have pinched it, I guess. And the last question to Ricky today when we left the locker was, when they played him around, he says, I'll let you know. But he did say that Seve Zavala will catch tomorrow. He batted today and struck out his first Major League appearance. But he'll play tomorrow, and he will be starting catcher for the White Sox. So those are the updates from the locker.
You staying around for Game 3?
No, I got to come back. But I was... I mean, I'll give him some luck by leaving. I don't know, but it's a great park up here. It's a beautiful park, and Minnesota handles their press real well. It's a great arena. So I enjoyed my 2 days here, and the coverage, I hope, was good, and we'll go back and come back some other day. But so the White Sox get together and squeeze one out tomorrow.
Always good to have you on, Rich King. Appreciate you checking in, and travel safe back.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. Bye. Rich King up in Minnesota, WGN-TV, and now doing some stuff for WGN Radio. Head to the park for Dollar Hot Dogs every Wednesday home game this season. You can take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, May 29th. As the Sox take on the Royals at 7:10 p.m. It's brought to you by Securian Financial, who can help you make every moment count. Find out more at Securian.com. For tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/DollarDogs today. And also head to the park after work for bleachers and brews. I think you could do that before work, too, depending on your work. Get one bleacher seat, two beers, $22. That's all season long. You do have to be 21 and over with a valid ID. Bleachers and Brews, presented by Budweiser. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brew and enter the promo code BREW. All right, White Sox player of development, Chris Getz, coming up next. We'll check in on the minor leagues. That is straight ahead on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
At the wall, the 380, gone. A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, as we roll on, the Director of Player Development, Chris Getz, is with us. I think this is the first time we've spoken in 2019, Chris Getz. Good to have you on the show, as always.
Well, thanks for having me, and good to be on here in 2019.
So, I'm sitting here getting ready for the interview today, and you know, I'm looking at the AAA roster, and I'm looking at the big leagues, and I'm thinking, Charlie Tilson, Ryan Cordell, Daniel Palka, Nicky Delmonico, Jose Ruiz, Thiago Vieira, Dylan Covey, Carson Fulmer, Aaron Bummer, I mean, on and on and on, Osich, Frere, Adam Engel. All these guys have been on the big leagues to the AAA to back or one way or the other all year, and you've experienced that. It's not easy, right, for a guy to be feeling like every at-bat his future is on the line. Like, can you talk about what the experience is like for these guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of activity, which is good in the sense of opportunity, but also, sure, I think there's some added pressure that you put on yourself as a player. You know, going into spring training and certainly towards the end of spring training, there's always a bit of an obsession on who's going to make the 25-man roster, right? And lo and behold, inevitably, you know, 3 days into the season, a guy from AAA is going to be on the major league roster. And obviously this year, there has been a lot of up and down. Sometimes that's a good thing for the major league club, and sometimes it's not a good thing based on, you know, what's going on. But, you know, for those players, I kind of try to communicate that. You know, we get caught up with making the major league team, but if you don't, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be up there and get opportunity and be able to potentially stick. But, you know, with the Charlie Tilsons, the Cordells, the Bummers, guys that have gone down, let's say, and maybe a little disappointed. But with that being said, these guys are pros. They went down there. They didn't hang their head. They put their work in. And opportunity came, and now that they've and they were playing well, obviously, and now they're up in the big leagues, and they're continuing to help the team win, and that's really a testament to them and how they approach this whole thing.
So I saw a pretty cool story with Tilson, and Mark Grudzielanek, Charlotte Knights AAA manager, told him, "I don't want to see you back here." And I don't know how much you got to watch AAA this year, but were you seeing the progression in Charlie World? Hey, man, if this dude gets his chance, he probably, and he has, you know, huge grand slam earlier in the week, but did you see, like, perhaps if he does get his chance, this guy could actually stick?
I did see that. And, you know, everyone kind of knows, most people know Charlie's story. He's been handed, you know, tough tickets, really. I mean, with the injury to his hamstring, then he had a foot injury that he got through the rehab process. And then he was really never, it's just taken him a while to really regain the strength, and be back to the player that he once was, and, kind of who we thought he was going to be. So he finally recovered, had a healthy off season. He was well prepared. He was strong. And then baseball-wise, everything seemed to be in sync, which was very connected just to his health. I thought he looked like a different player in spring training. And certainly down in Charlotte, I was able to see him when they were over in Indy, and certainly in communicating with Drew Zelonick and Frank Menachino. And the ball, he was just hitting the ball harder. I mean, we've got all the metrics nowadays, but if you just watch and you listen, you see the at-bats that he's putting together, that you know that it should translate for success at the major league level. You were going to see a better Charlie Tilson this year, and we've been fortunate to to all kind of experience it. And I couldn't be happier because Charlie's such a great kid and he works his butt off.
Yeah, I mean, how do you not like Charlie Tilson? I just noticed it talking to him, you know, on the last homestand. It's like, dude, you've put on some weight. I mean, it's clear that he spent time in the weight room. So I don't know.
He years ago, and I got to know Charlie, I was still playing. We shared the same agent. We actually worked out together. Certainly different stages of our careers, but Charlie, you know, we were working out together. We were running together, lifting together, and he was faster than me and he was stronger than me. And I know that's not saying much, but he was a sturdy, athletic kid and just continued to grow. And I'm just happy he's getting this opportunity now.
Well, let's not dog on the Chris Getz speed. I'm not going to say you're a bodybuilder, but I mean, you were stealing bags when you were out there, Chris Getz.
Well, my point is, I if there was one thing I was confident in, it was that, and I felt that Charlie had actually a leg up on me.
Yeah, no, that's a big time compliment. And since we jumped a little bit into your playing career, I've been paying attention to Alcides Escobar down at AAA, and he's been consistent all year. He's got the batting average well up over 300. And, you know, I know that the White Sox have a ton of people in the infield, but it seems like somebody would want this guy on a major league roster. He's been impressive, has he not?
He has. Eski's really gone, you know, for a guy that hasn't been in the minor leagues for years, he's putting together some really good at-bats. He's driving the ball. Yeah, I mean, he's in a really, really good place. I was just down in Charlotte this past weekend. He was driving some balls to the gap. Hitting the ball to all field. It was really fun to watch him play. And he's got a great attitude like he always has. I'm seeing major league ability. I really am, and wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way helping us at some point or perhaps even another club.
I mean, this is a guy who's the MVP of the ALCS. He's got a World Series ring. He's played in a ton of big games, and it's not like he was having a bad career up there. I mean, he's a career 260 hitter. So, and he's not old either. So I think it's a nice piece to just to be having sitting there in case something happens to anyone. I mean, at the bare minimum, and maybe he's a part of some deal. Who knows?
Yeah, no, it's a nice piece to have down in AAA. And yeah, he's accomplished a lot in this game, and he's here to help, you know, and he's going about this thing the right way. And, you know, teammates love him, but ultimately he still has some major league skills in there.
Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development, with us here on White Sox Weekly. All right, let's get to the hard stuff here. When is Dylan Cease coming up, Chris Getz?
tough to give you a hard date here. I saw him pitch last Friday. He's pitching tonight. He was very good on Friday. You saw that, you know, mid to upper 90s. He was locating his fastball. His delivery and tempo was solid. The usual curveball was there, and the slider was very impressive. So it was a nice outing, and I was going to build off of it. He's moving towards the big leagues. He's developing. We've been impressed so far, but we've been impressed since day one with Dylan Cease. So he's going to be a helpful part of our major league club when that time comes.
Conversation with Chris Getz continuing after the 5:30 news. And Dylan, with 7 strikeouts and 6 innings in that start that Getz is talking about, his ERA down to 3.38. So Dylan with another good one in the book. Sox fans, join us as the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians on Saturday, June the 1st. The first 20,000 fans will receive a Chicago-themed White Sox jersey presented by NBC Sports Chicago. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. Check the news coming up on 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Good to have you along. 5:36 on an absolutely beautiful, gorgeous Saturday afternoon. Sox did lose to the Twins 8-1. And they are now 2-4 on the 7-game road trip, which concludes tomorrow. Dylan Covey versus Jake Odorizzi. Our pregame show is at 12:35. Andy Mazur will have that for you. And then first pitch 1:10, Ed and DJ on the call. Andy was down in Houston this week filling in for DJ for the Astros series. He caught up with Ricky Renteria down there. So we'll have that conversation coming up after 6 o'clock. Dylan Cease, as we continue our conversation with Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development, these are his numbers right now. He's 4-1. That's great. His ERA is 3.38. Very solid. He started 8 games now, 40 innings. So 40 divided by 8 there, Curtis. You know what that is? That's 5, correct. 5 innings a start. It's not exactly, in my mind, ready to come up to the big leagues. You're going 5 innings a start. Now, he's lengthening out a little bit here, but he's still yet to go 7. He threw 102 pitches in his last start, which is the most that he's thrown. 40 innings, 40 hits. That's a good ratio. But again, not completely overpowering, and I'm not trying to downplay Dylan Cease at all, but I'm just, there seems to be this rush to get him up here. His whip is 1.38. I can see why the White Sox are giving him a little bit more time. He struck out 48. He's walked only 15. That is excellent. So as we bring Chris Getz in here, White Sox Director of Player Development, what do you make of these numbers, Chris? I mean, he isn't completely crushing AAA.
Yes. Now, with that being said, AAA this year is a little bit different than it has been in the past, and I say that because we've got Major League balls. The offense... the increase in offense is, we're looking at almost not quite 100%, but it's definitely impacted. But with that, Dylan, you know, his first couple starts, he was a little out of sync, just kind of finding himself. But you saw the raw ingredients there. The weapons are there. When you go there and just evaluate what he's throwing. Yeah, it's still the same guy. Now, piecing it all together, there were some inconsistencies there, but he's starting to get into a groove. I imagine that he'll continue to do so. You know, we gave him some short outings early on, and we're starting to kind of grow upon that. So I see kind of a better rhythm coming from Dylan.
And that was my next question. So he hasn't pitched in the seventh inning yet. Is that a thing? Like, do you want to see him go 7-8 before he comes up? Is that part of it?
We do. And you know, mind you, some of those shorter outings were by design. Those were kind of dictated by the organization. But now we're at a point where we're a little bit more comfortable for him to go out there and compete deep into the game. And yes, we want to see him go deeper into games before he comes up here, because it's going to be expected for him to do something like that.
It's tricky too, right? I mean, he's thrown, I think, the most innings in one season is 135, I want to say.
Yes.
And so, if you bring him up, you don't want to, plop him well over 200, because, there's tons of data that's saying if you make a huge jump in 1 year, that's not good for a pitcher, right? So it's a little tricky on how you're going to do this.
It is a little tricky. You can get creative in terms of, extra days, working off of off days, maybe skipping starts. You hate to limit the innings. You really do. You want the guy to go, and I say that within an outing. You want the guy to have the ability to complete the game. But when you have these unique cases where you've got a guy that's throwing 135, 140, that's all he has under his belt. You know, we're thinking long term for Dylan. We're thinking long term for the organization. So we have to do what's smart. So we'll get creative along the way. But right now, let's get him in a groove. He's almost there, and we'll just kind of go from there. But he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to go late in the games just based on what he's capable of doing.
Did he get a perfect score on his SATs? Does he do the New York Times crossword puzzle? He seems way too smart to be a baseball player, with all due respect to baseball players.
Yeah, he's fairly intellectual, but he's just kind of he's very comfortable in his own skin, understanding of who he is, what he wants to become, very level-headed, can have different types of conversations, certainly baseball, but it could be world politics. He's just a really interesting guy, and could do a lot of different things in his life, but we're fortunate as a as White Sox fans and people that he's part of our organization.
Cease versus Giolito, Connect Four. Who do you got?
Ooh, that's good. I might go Giolito on that one.
Giolito scares me with his intelligence, too. That guy starts talking, it's like, dude, you should be a lawyer. Go into a courtroom, win some cases, make some, you know?
Yeah, bring it back to planet Earth, please.
I mean, it's impressive. All right, so I got an email from the White Sox. I get a vote on the, the offensive player of the month, the pitcher of the month in the minor leagues. And, like, we need your vote for April for the pitcher. And I looked at all the stats. I voted for Connor Pilkington, so I was the deciding vote. He won that thing. I'm very proud of this accomplishment, Chris Getz. So was I right in voting for him? Because obviously I haven't seen these guys play. I'm here in Chicago. But numbers-wise, it looked to me like he had the most impressive April.
Yeah, that's a good vote. Without question, he was more or less dominant in Kannapolis and got two starts under his belt in Winston-Salem. His first one, kind of had a little bit of the jitters. The second one was his best outing of the year. So I think that's a good choice. So nice job there.
Third round pick. He's out of Mississippi State. And I'm looking at the numbers too. He hasn't thrown over 100 pitches either. Same thing with Dylan Cease, who hasn't thrown over 100 in a game. Do you anticipate, like, at that level? I mean, he's a college guy, so a little bit different. But do you want to stretch him out even when you're at Winston-Salem?
I stretch him out in terms of within the outing how many pitches were, like, a monitor into the pitches?
Yeah, would you allow him to throw 110, 115?
Yeah, we would, yeah. I mean, it's just I think if we go about and go the 110 mark, let's say, we might adjust for the next one. But I definitely want these guys to approach each game that this is their game. They can take this game and give them the game. And if we need to adjust in following starts, we do so.
Does it piss you off, for lack of a better word? Because a lot of when Carlos Rodon got hurt, people say, the White Sox don't know how to handle pitchers. And I'm sitting here like, look, this is not a mystery on how to handle a guy. This is well known without baseball. So I just kind of curious, like, how you hear that the Sox aren't handling their pitchers correctly.
Yeah, I don't think that's completely accurate. Listen, throwing a baseball is not good for anyone's arm, right? So there's different ways to kind of control the fatigue. And, we try to do that certainly on the minor league side and then at the major league level. But the intensity that this game brings certainly is going to put stress on the arm. And we've got players now that are throwing harder than they've ever before. So it's not really a White Sox issue. It's a game issue. You make your adjustments along the way. You certainly bring everyone together and put a plan together for each guy and monitor it as the season goes on. And does that mean that we're not going to have injuries moving forward? Unfortunately, we're going to have injuries moving forward. But we try to avoid it the best we can, because in speaking just in the minor leagues, I want these guys to have great minor league careers, but really it's about what's ahead of them at the major league level. So we've got a plan in place. We feel good about where we're at and how we approach things. And, trying to prepare these guys the best I can, best we can, to be successful at the major league level.
White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz. A quick time out here. Come on back with Chris. This interview is sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make car shopping fun. And a reminder, take the family out to the ball game with a family four-pack. You get four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, four chips. It's not all for you. It's for the family. It starts at $49. Brought to you by Country Financial. Prepare for your financial future one simple step at a time and take simplesteps.com. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/4packs and enter promo code VALUE. One more little jaunt with Chris Getz coming on back here, the White Sox Player of Development on White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you. Talking with Chris Getz, White Sox Director of Player Development. And we got, let's see if we can talk to Chris up to 6 o'clock here. Mr. Getz, how happy are you? Let's talk about Eloy. Three home runs this week. That was sweet to see. How happy would you say you are so far with seeing what he's doing in the big leagues?
With Eloy, he obviously last night was nice to see.
Yeah.
You know, they... he hasn't really gotten in rhythm yet. You know, if you look back at spring training to the beginning of the year, obviously with the injury and the passing of a family member, just to be able to roll him out there, get consistent at bats. But you see it. You know, you're seeing a guy, an ability to drive the ball to all parks. He's getting his fair share of sliders. They did the same thing in the minor league. There were plenty of times where, okay, you're seeing some swing and miss, but then he would close the gap. So clearly we believe in this kid. He's continuing to prove that he's got tremendous offensive ability. There's going to be adjustments along the way. We're going to see stretches here that, you know, that maybe at times a little frustrating, but that's part of building this player up to be one of the top players in the game, in which we think he can certainly become.
And let's go to Winston-Salem, Nick Madrigal, who he's not getting a hit every single time up, Chris Getz, but the it looks like to me from a distance here again that he's having a solid start to the year. What would you say?
Yeah, I would agree with that. His at-bats have been consistent. He's squaring up a lot of pitches, using the whole field, playing as usual, above-average defense. The instincts are strong. You know, it's been good. He hasn't, you know, completely broken out, in which we know that he's going to do that, but he's been solid. We're very happy where he's at from a developmental standpoint.
If you dropped Luis Robert into the big leagues right now, how would he do?
He'd hold his own. He would. I mean, certainly, you know, the defense would be impressive, the base running. You know, when he was in Winston-Salem, it was was impressive. I saw him right before we moved him up to Double A, and it had gotten to the point. I mean, everything he was hitting was a double, triple, or a homer. Watching him run underway, I mean, it was just above the rest. But the opposing teams were no longer throwing it over the plate. They were working it in and off in. You know, he got hit a couple times. I said, it's time to move him forward. It's not even safe for him to be there. So. He's been up in Birmingham. He's continued to play well. I think it's the right level for him right now. Still solid at bat, scoring up pitches, playing good defense. How would he do in the big leagues? He would do fine. He's not ready for the big leagues, and that's why he's in Double-A. But certainly ultra-talented kid, and it continues to get better.
If I said I want to make a bet that Robert actually turns out to be a better player than Eloy, would I be crazy?
I don't think you'd be crazy to say that. I mean, they're different types of players. Both players can be well above average type major league players. And if you have that thought, listen, I would be ecstatic if he was, because that means we got a pretty good ball club.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to dog either of them on that. I just look at this guy runs like a deer. He's got power. He's got a whole. I mean, I'm just excited to see him and the story. Would you say he's a leadoff guy long term, or more middle of the order, maybe perhaps down in the order?
I see him towards the top. I do. You know, he's got really good bat to ball skills. You know, certainly pitch selection is something that's going to have to continue to develop from an on base standpoint. But I still think there's going to be enough of a threat with when he pitches that he squares up, that he'll be able to work the pitcher out of the zone and get on base and be able to just impress once he gets there. But I think you've got some flexibility with him towards the top, middle of the order. You know, he's 21 years old, so you can go a lot of different ways here, but I still think towards the top it would be a good place for him long term.
So what's going on at Double-A with Blake Rutherford struggling, Basabe struggling, a lot of guys are off to slow starts. How are they handling it? And I know that's a huge level jump from Winston-Salem to Birmingham. So what are you seeing?
Yeah, I don't think anyone really anticipated some of these struggles. However, it's a very tight-knit group. And when they were together in Winston-Salem, obviously they all played very well. They all played very well together. So when these guys kind of struggled early on, you know, they just struggle together, right? They kind of feed off of each other. You've got a lot of young players that are going to a level that's a challenging level, and it's taken a little bit of time. But we've seen some encouraging signs that things are going to get better. The way I view this with that group, the second half is big for me. You know, kind of going through their bumps and bruises. They got slow starts. But let's see how they finish. So we're just from a staff standpoint, from my standpoint, continue to encourage these guys, give them the information. You know, we spent a lot of time down there. We will continue to do so. These guys are still showing up with a lot of energy. We still see the tools, the skill sets. But let's have them finish strong. They're ultra talented group. I still believe that we've got some major leaguers there, and this is part of it. I think it's actually a positive in the end. These guys really haven't gotten a heavy dose of struggling before, but you've got to go through this. You've got to work through it. You've got to overcome it. That's part of the development.
I'm just thinking about, you know, you got Omar managing, you've got Grud managing, you're in the front office. You ever get that managing itch, Chris?
You know what? I don't have too much time to think about something like that. I mean, let's be honest. I've got a lot on the plate. We've got a lot of players here. Do I love baseball? Absolutely. Am I into this whole thing? Yeah, I can't get enough of it. To envision myself managing, haven't really gone there.
Really?
To be quite honest, this is you know, a fun undertaking. We'll continue to do that, and we'll just kind of go from there.
All right. I'm not trying to cause any controversy here. I'm just, you know, I think it's fun being in the dugout and all that type of stuff. All right, two more. Taylor Varnell, 29th round pick, Oral Roberts. He's killing it at Kannapolis. 49 innings, 38 hits. He struck out 60. Should White Sox fans know this name?
They should. Did you consider voting for him for the pitcher of the month?
I haven't gotten the May thing, but I think I might. I mean, come on. Those numbers.
That was a really good draft pick. Let's be honest. He's got a good curveball. Kind of a pitchability guy, not a guy that's going to run it up there, but he's got some sneak to his fastball. Yeah, I mean, guys like this find their way to the big league. Certainly, it's great to have. He'll continue to I'm sure pitch well this year, and we'll move him along here at some point. But he's doing a nice job. But yeah, that's just a great draft pick. I'm happy to have him.
All right, I want to wrap up with two more. Number one, what's been your reaction to Tim Anderson's journey this year? I've been loving it.
I mean, Tim, I just look at the production, right? And what drives him every single day. I mean, he wakes up and he couldn't be more excited to come to the ballpark and play baseball. He shows it on the field. He's showing it off the field. This is who he is. I think it's great for the White Sox. It's great for baseball. Clearly, you know, he feeds off this type of energy and others do as well. So I'm really happy for him. And I think, you know, he's really showing us what he's capable of doing.
I wouldn't have hated it if he had charged Brad Keller, just for the record. I asked him about that. He didn't really want to go there. He said that was in the past, which is vintage Tim Anderson. What do you think about Juwan Howard as we wrap up here, you Michigan man, being the head coach of your basketball team? This dude's made millions of dollars. He can't be as motivated as you would want a college basketball coach to be. I think you're going to have some trouble here, Chris Getz, with Howard running the show over John Beilein now in the NBA.
Well, listen, Beilein was fantastic for so many different reasons. Obviously, he made a decision to move on to the NBA, and I think he'll continue to do a nice job. You know, it's tough to find guys to fill in some of these top college programs. And for Juwan Howard to be willing to do this, I'm excited. You know, just the hearing what some of his former teammates or players that he's coached kind of come out and speak so highly of him, seems like a class act. Obviously, he's got history with Michigan. He's had a long, you know, storied NBA career. He's been helping out with some great NBA teams, won championships. So to have him at Michigan, I would imagine that he's going to be a very good recruiter, very good coach. He seems to be able to communicate well. And he's part of the Fab Five. So I'm loving it. So I look forward to seeing what he's capable of doing.
What's your Fab Five memory? Do you have one?
Gosh, I guess in the end it was kind of disappointing. But, you know, just I guess the short. I love the shorts. I mean, they changed the landscape of the game from the outset.
Yeah, the shorts were incredible. That team was incredible. I don't care about the timeout, and I hated Michigan back then, for the record. I was at Iowa, and I grew up rooting for Northwestern and all of it. But that team, one of the greatest college basketball teams of all time. Just not, you know, I don't care they didn't win a title, all of it. That team was phenomenal. All right. great to talk to you, Director of Player Development, Chris Getz, as always. And continued success. Looking forward to the rest of the year, and we'll catch up down the line.
All right, Mark. Thanks for having me, man.
Quick timeout and news coming up on 720 WGN.
WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
6 o'clock hour, White Sox Weekly. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Mark Harmon with you. Sox lost today to the Minnesota Twins, 8-1. Twins have won the first two in the series. Dylan Covey will start tomorrow, as the Sox will try to win that one, salvage the final game, and go 3-4 on the road trip. We're going to hear from the manager, Ricky Renteria, coming up here. He sat down with Andy Mazur, who was down in Houston, filling in for Darren Jackson, who was off on the first leg of this road trip. So that's coming up in a matter of moments here. Just a reminder, Sox fans, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians Thursday, May 30th, 7:10 p.m., the first pitch. The first 10,000 fans will get a White Sox retro-themed T-shirt. It's presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. Ricky and Andy, this is a conversation not so much about what's going on the field as much as sort of Ricky's journey to the big leagues. And Andy actually, if you followed Andy's career, he was in San Diego doing play-by-play for the Padres when Ricky was there before he ended up coming to Chicago, first with the Cubs, and of course now with the White Sox. So this is a conversation with Andy and Ricky and a little bit about Ricky's journey to the big leagues.
When did you first get bitten by the baseball bug?
Ooh, as a youngster, very, very young, 8 or 9 years old probably. All my older brothers played organized ball in the neighborhood, and I actually was out just with my mom pitching to us a little bit, my little brothers, at a local ballpark in Compton where I grew up, and one of the local coaches was just walking around and came over and asked me if I'd be interested in playing. So I had to ask my dad, who was at work, and my mom, you know, was all startled. You know, what does this gentleman like want? And he just wants to know if I'd be interested in playing some ball. So I would say I was probably 9, 8, 9, 10 years old. Yeah.
Do you remember the first big league game that you ever attended?
It's a good question. I think I went to a Dodger ball game, obviously being from L.A. And I don't recall if it was my cousin or my dad that took me, but I remember the Mets were in town. I think Willie Mays was at the end of his career playing for the Mets. And I think somebody looked this up the other day. It might have been Jason. And actually, he did play. So I was accurate in that he was there on a particular day. So I was able to get there. I just remember as a kid, he was one of my, you know, favorites, Pete Rose, you know, all these guys. I mean, we grew up in that era kind of watching them as little guys. So, yeah, that was a Dodger game against the Mets.
And when did you first think that, you know, I got a chance to make it here, I got a chance to get paid to do this?
Wow. I don't know that that I ever did. I think, you know, you fall in love with playing the game first and foremost, and I'd be lying to you that I didn't recognize that people were coming out to watch us play, there were always a lot of guys there, and so there was a thought in my mind that maybe I could get signed and you know, get a chance to play professional baseball. Always a little bit at a distance, but yeah, I mean, they were around quite a bit, and it was kind of obvious that they were coming out to see if I could play.
What do you remember about your big league debut? I know we've talked about this before, but let everybody know what you remember about it.
Well, I was with the Pirates. I got called up in September. I know I didn't play for a week or 10 days, something like that. I remember finally getting my first at-bat. I had a pinch hit at-bat. I do remember getting a base hit up the middle. I do remember taking the first pitch because I really was a little nervous, to be honest, and then ended up hitting a ground ball, I think, up the middle.
Base hit, of course, solid one, line tour, right?
It was I hit it well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It looked like in the box score and on the field too. That's good to know. You moved around a little bit. And you were an original Marlin too. Yeah. I mean, that was probably a cool experience with baseball coming to South Florida.
Yeah, it was. It was actually a great experience. I was actually out of playing in the States for a while because I had sustained an injury a couple years previous, and I actually went to minor league camp with the Marlins in '93. And as they shuttle players back and forth, as most clubs do, I ended up making the team. So it was a pretty eventful year and pretty exciting for all of us, I guess. But it wasn't your usual route of making a major league ball club.
And you have a unique perspective, too, with some of the guys on your team as well, because, you know, you weren't the superstar on your team, no offense, obviously, but you've admitted that to me before, yeah. So I feel comfortable saying that. But, I mean, you have an idea now what these guys are going through, and I think you can probably relate to them a little bit better.
Sure. I was a journeyman. You know, I didn't become the player that everybody thought I was going to be when I was first drafted and signed. But I felt that I did contribute in some capacity to most clubs that I played on. And you learn a lot through failure. A lot of it is probably the ability to communicate certain sensations and feelings that guys have that when they're going through certain moments. Because even though as in limited and a mediocre career that I did have, you do have some big moments in those times, and you remember some of those things that you had to deal with, and some of the people that you were facing, and some of the things that you have to come to grips with. You know, both making errors, making nice plays, but playing both sides of the ball. Just a lot of different things, and obviously it's a very demanding place to play.
And from your experience, obviously these guys can understand that, you know, you did play it at a high level, and you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think, you know, fortunately, playing for a few different clubs at the major league level and experiencing different things, played alongside some great players, you know what it's about. You know that it's not the easiest thing to do because the talent level is so good. And I think that we have to, you know, never forget how difficult it is to actually perform in front of so many people that expect so much, but they know that that's a part of it. You know, they have to accept the fact that they're expected to go out there and do a job, and they try to do the best they can. They prepare, and no one goes out there to fail. They go out there to try to do what they're supposed to be able to do, and sometimes it doesn't work out, but it's never for lack of effort or preparation. But by the same token, the same people that might get on you a little bit, they always give you a lot of love when you're going out there and doing what you're supposed to be doing.
How much enjoyment do you get out of teaching? Because I know sometimes people will say, well, I played it at this level. I don't know if I can relate this to you because I'm not sure what words you're going to understand. But, yeah. I mean, you've been a very good communicator with all your players throughout the ranks.
You know what? I think that all the staff that, you know, I have here, you know, they all do a very nice job of trying to make sure they can connect with the players, try to break things down so that they understand them. You know, we bounce things off of each other. We try to find a way to be able to communicate information that an individual will understand. Everybody's different. There are different ways and different modes of doing it. So I think it is a challenge, especially at the major league level, to try to find a way to be able to give information to players so that it works. It doesn't necessarily have to work immediately, so you have to be able to trust, and they have to be able to trust that what you're telling them will work ultimately to give them the best chance to do what they need to do. So it does take a little time, and teaching is a part of the way it's supposed to be. I think all of us do the best that we possibly can. We learn from each other. I mean, I learn from you. I learn from everybody that I work alongside of. So it's a challenge, but it's a lot of fun. And when the guys get it, when that skill and the ability to execute comes together, it's a tremendously satisfying experience.
You're one of the most positive people that I've ever met in the game, and I can say that honestly because we've been around each other for a while. How do you guard against just getting frustrated? Because you'd like to see more out of these guys. I'm sure they'd like to see more of themselves as well, but how do you guard against that just to make sure that doesn't permeate that clubhouse?
Well, you know, these guys in and of itself need to make sure they understand and see me as being a level-headed, even-keeled person, which I try to, you know, always project. I think it's very, very important. I think they ultimately genuinely understand that I trust that they're going to be able to get the job done and that I believe in their abilities. Sometimes we all get frustrated. Things don't work out the way you want them to, but I think I have enough of a support system, not only with the fans, with the people that I work alongside of every single day, but the players themselves. They know that I understand. They know that the coaches understand how difficult this is, and I think it's a little easier for me to be able to handle frustrations or frustrating moments. Sometimes you have to, you know, kind of take a step back as well. I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you I close the door every now and then just to make sure that I can catch my breath, share my moments with you know, the people that I'm around all the time, and then leave it there and get back out on the field and do what we do as well as we possibly can, and stay positive, because, you know, there's enough getting knocked down and being told what you can't do most of your life, and I think these guys need to know that we do believe that they're capable of doing what they're supposed to do between the lines.
All right, along those lines, last one for you. There's got to be a lot of satisfaction, too, in seeing some of these guys really emerge from where they were last year to where they are this year. I'll let you mention the names because I have a few in my mind, but that's got to be a special feeling for you, too.
Well, of course. I think it's because, you know, when you hear, you know, the trepidation or the concerns over some of the players, you know, you talk about, you know, Yoan Moncada strikeouts, or you talk about Timmy not being able to go into the hole, or whatever the case might be. You know, these guys have started to turn the corner in a big way. And I think as they continue to be challenged by, like, a guy like yesterday in Verlander and a club like the Houston Astros, who are a championship-type club, when you get challenged and you have to raise your game, you start to understand what it is that's needed of you to be able to excel and to compete at this level with the best. And I think those are two of the young men in particular, on top of Lucas Giolito, you know, who has turned a corner, I think, on the hill. You look at Lopi, who's still a young man who's also turning the corner. We have some guys here on this club, and don't forget the veterans. You have a guy like Abreu, who's, you know, coming out and carrying us and doing things, you know, that most people might not think he's capable of doing, but he's the ultimate professional and is capable of doing a lot. These guys are all coming together, and we still have so many coming from the minor league side, and I'm sure I've failed to mention more, but we're really proud of how they're moving forward, and ultimately I think, you know, again, I repeat, I think the Chicago fans will have a really nice base to look forward to as we continue to evolve.
So there was Andy and Ricky Renteria. How do you not like Ricky Renteria, right? Just a good-hearted dude who has paid his dues, and hey, everybody wants this White Sox rebuild to work out for everyone involved, but it would be sweet on just a managerial level if Ricky gets to experience all the good things that hopefully are coming for the White Sox in the next couple of years. Hey, celebrate the unofficial start to summer with this weekend's flash sale. You get tickets for just $10 to select upcoming games, and you can start your summer with the White Sox. The flash sale is going on now through Monday, so get your tickets at whitesox.com/flash sale. All right, coming on back here, we'll do our week in review, as there's some good stuff going down in Houston. We'll hear some highlights coming on back here of the week that was. It's White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN. Oh yeah, it's White Sox Weekly. Coming up after 6:30, we'll hear from Nick Madrigal with the Winston-Salem Dash. We'll catch up with Nick for the first time in 2019. Mark Harmon with you, Curtis Koch producing. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Sox did lose to the Twins by the score of 8-1. And White Sox fans, join us Friday, May 31st. That is for 80s night. And you get a post-game fireworks show. It's presented by Great Clips. Great Clips, it's going to be great. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. As we go to our week in review, and they did start rough with a couple losses to Houston on Monday and Tuesday. Sox losing 3-0 in game one of the series to the Astros, and then game two, 5-1. So in two games, the Sox had one run, and that came on a Jose Abreu home run. But that changed on Wednesday in a big-time way. Big moment for Charlie Tilson.
Josh Sanchez from the set, the 1-0. Swinging a long one to right. Tag, bag, slam. Sox lead 8-3. I wish we could turn on the fireworks. We're indoors.
Turn it on, Farmio, wherever you are. First homer for Charlie, a grand slam, and the Sox go on to win 9-4. And then Thursday was even better. Lucas Giolito, his first ever real complete game. He got one 5 innings against the Jays in the rain-shortened game. That counts in the books, but this one counts even more when you go 9 innings and shut out one of the best teams in baseball on the road. And he got some help from Eloy Jimenez.
Here's a swing and a long one to left. Tag, bagged. Did it go out? Yes, says the second base umpire. Eloy hits a home run to left, and it was a laser out of here.
Well, it's only three home runs in the last two games.
He's got six.
Exactly right. Three in two games for Aloy down in Houston. Sox won that game 4-0. They moved on to Minnesota on Friday, and the Twins, well, actually, the Sox had a 4-1 lead in that game, but then the Twins scored 10 runs in a row and won that one 11-4, and today was an 8-1 final. So far on the trip, Sox sitting at 2-4. We'll see if they can salvage the final game tomorrow afternoon. Dylan Covey will start the finale, and the Sox coming home to play the Royals. Brad Keller, you remember that name, him and Tim Anderson with their moment. Brad Keller is pitching on Tuesday night. Hopefully Timmy's wrist will be okay to go by then. I'd love to see those two match up Tuesday at Guaranteed Rate Field. Hey, Family Sundays feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level, $15 $5 in the upper level, $15 in the lower level, and parking for only $10. Plus, you get the special family-focused activities located throughout the ballpark. Family Sundays, proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Grab an ice-cold Coca-Cola and enjoy the game. Visit whitesox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. Family Sundays, kids get to run the bases after the game. How sweet is that? Get to take my niece out there every now and then. She loves it. Go on to the ballpark on Sundays. It is a great, great experience. All right, quick timeout. News coming up. And then Nick Madrigal right after 6:30 on 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox. 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly continuing as we go down to Winston-Salem and pick it up with Nick Madrigal, who is now a member of the Winston-Salem Dash, but you it's a little familiar for you, Nick, in the sense that you got the same manager that you had last year in Jurich, Justin Jurich, following you along. So maybe you guys are just a tandem that's going to go on all the way up to the big leagues.
I mean, I could see that. He's doing a great job here. That wouldn't surprise me at all if he's up there one day.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
You know, last year I got a taste of, the whole scheduling and everything, so you know, I really wasn't too surprised about anything this year. I really see how long of a season it is. I mean, we haven't even made a dent in the season yet, and it feels like it's been a while. So I think the biggest part is just kind of taking care of my body. I do a lot of stretching, so that's been huge for me. But like I said, I mean, last year I got a little taste of it. I'm not too surprised so far.
Yeah, you guys are 24-23 coming into tonight's game, so that's 47 games. So you're about one third of the way through, Nick. Does that make you feel good?
Yeah. It's kind of funny when you think about it. We're not even halfway there yet. So a long ways to go, a lot of baseball left to be played.
How would you assess the start of your year? I know that you had a stretch there where you were in an 0-15, 0-16, and you bounced back out of that. Was it almost something that you are happy you went through, because this game, of course, is about failure and how you bounce back from it?
And no, I don't think I'll ever be happy about going 0-15 or anything. I know it's part of the game of baseball. I know that, in that stretch, maybe I hit some balls right on the screws at people. I know that's part of the game. You know, I've been around this game my whole life. I know you're going to have ups and downs. I think the biggest part is just kind of staying even keel through it all. When I'm going hot, not getting too high, and when I'm going bad, not too low. So it was one of those things I didn't stress too much over. I know people in the box scores or whatever, had things to say about it. But like I said, it's a long, long season. I'm going to have the most at-bats I've ever had, in one season. So, I'm completely fine. I feel good at this point. Like I said, it's a long season ahead.
Yeah, no, and I get it. I'm not trying to say that, obviously it can't be fun going through a stretch where even if you're hitting the ball hard, that it's not falling in there. But to be able to handle that and get through it and stay confident in yourself, that's a learning moment right there. That's something that you're only going to get through playing.
Yeah, exactly. Watching major leagues, I think that's why they're up there, and some of the guys are the best, is because they're so consistent, and they show up every day, and you watching a game, you can't tell if they're 0-15 or 15-15, that's why it makes them the best. that's something I've always kind of witnessed and seen and really try to emulate, you know, growing up.
Nick Madrigal, White Sox prospect, Winston-Salem Dash, first-round draft pick, talking with us on White Sox Weekly 720 WGN. So you're stealing bases. You had three the other day. You're walking more. You've always been a stolen base guy, but the walks are creeping up. Is that something that you've been trying to do, or is it just sort of natural progression? What would you say?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I really try to add that to my game. You know, I've always been real aggressive. I think at these lower levels, you kind of got to tone it back a little bit because, I mean, sometimes pitchers, you'll see that, you know, they can't really – you know, spot up the zone, like higher levels. So that's something I try to keep in the back of my mind. But I mean, walks will just happen, just playing the game, seeing the ball well. And yeah, I think that's something I definitely try to think about and add to my game.
Is it more of a focus of I'm just going to swing at strikes? Because maybe the pitch is out of the zone, but you know, you're talented enough to be able to, you know, get a base hit on it or whatever. But maybe you're trying to condition yourself like I want to swing at pitches only in the zone.
Yeah, it is bad. I think that there's times where maybe a hitter's count, you know, you obviously want to, you know, try to drive the ball in the gap or wherever it may be, but just kind of staying within yourself. You know, sometimes when I get too big is when I chase balls out of the zone. So I really try to, you know, just keep it simple and, you know, let my instincts take over. And I feel a lot more comfortable this year with that.
You hit your first homer, Nick. How'd it feel?
It felt good, yeah. It felt good. It was actually a line drive, so I really didn't think it was. Fortunate enough, it snuck out.
Yeah, I'm reading it. Nick Madrigal crushed his first homer, and then I watched the video. I'm like, you can't use crushed with that. He hit a line drive laser that got out. The ball was smoked. I think smoked is a fair word. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, I don't know. I think I'd rather have that than a high fly ball that sinks out. So I think it was hit pretty hard. I think that was worked out perfectly.
Okay. We could debate semantics on this one. Well, congratulations. That's awesome. And I'm just thinking about how you're talking about the long season. And you were a guy, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, growing up, like, baseball was always number one, number 1A, number 1B, 2, 3, and 4, and you would oil up your mitt before games. And so here the games just come every single day, which is, you know, different than college, different than anything. So how are you maintaining, like, being excited to play every day, but also, you know, keeping the it's a long season part of it as well?
You know, I'm pretty fortunate. I get to, you know, play the game of baseball for, you know, a living, for a job. So, you know, a lot of people don't get the chance to do that. So, I mean, I'm still excited. I still have the passion for baseball I've had throughout my life. You know, there's going to be days where I don't feel my best or, you know, my body is a little bit sore. But, you know, when I get out there, I'm excited to, you know, be with the guys, to, you know, compete. It's something I love to do. So, yeah, I don't think that'll ever. I think the day that changes when I'm not excited to go out there and do what I do is, you know, maybe when I should stop playing. You know? But I don't see that for a long, long time.
Yeah, just for the record, I'm super jealous. I just appreciate the enthusiasm that you have for it. So, what's the coolest stadium you have played in so far? What would you say?
I think it would be Myrtle Beach, the Cubs organization. You know, we stayed real close to the beach, and even the field is really nice. The best place ever to play it on, so I don't have to say that so far.
Do you have a roommate on the road or no?
Yeah, I do. I do. It's usually Jameson Fisher. You know, it's been awesome. Me and him have gotten real close. You know, he's a great player. You know, he usually hits behind me through to fourth in the order, and, you know, you can see how much talent he has. Getting to know him on a personal level, it's been awesome so far.
Does he snore?
No. You know, I got pretty fortunate. He goes to bed pretty early, so, and I do also. So, you know, it worked out perfectly.
There you go. What's the longest bus ride you got to play that you have it currently?
We were on a 5 or 6 hour one. I think it was Potomac. I mean, I think that was the trip. That was a fun trip. I don't know if we have anything farther than that this year.
What's your strategy for the bus?
You know, I try to watch some YouTube videos, some music, try to sleep a little, just kind of bounce around, keep myself busy. It's definitely not easy sleeping on a bus.
Are guys, is it? Would you say it's fun, or are people mostly in their own phones doing their thing?
Yeah, I think it's mostly guys doing their own thing. It's kind of funny. If someone can see the inside of a bus, right? There's people, you know, spread out everywhere. There's people on the floor of the bus. There's people with their legs. There's different chairs. It's kind of a free-for-all.
Yeah, University of Iowa, Nick, I was in geography class. I took that class because I only needed something. And we rode a bus from Iowa City, Iowa, to the Florida Keys. That was an experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I strategized by my buddy had the two seats to the left of me. I was to the right, and we had the legs going across. So, like, that's what you've given. Right? Have you ever used that strategy? That's a solid strategy right there.
That is. That's usually one of the guys that's been there for a while. If you got double-A time or whatever, you usually get your own seat. So that's something I'm going to work my way up to.
Okay. What would you say most likely is the plan for you this year? I mean, if you kill it, are you even thinking about going up to double-A? Is that a goal for you right now? I mean, I'm sure it is down the line, but is it more so?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I would definitely like to go up there hopefully soon. You know, I think, you know, if I play my game and ultimately it's their decision, I know they have a plan, but hopefully in the near future that's the plan. Well, I'm not too sure at this point.
Right. What's Jersh been telling you, if anything?
You know, we really haven't talked too much about, you know, moving to Toledo or anything like that. It's been mostly focused on, you know, the game at hand, the game that day, strategizing and things like that. But Jersh has been awesome. I've gotten real close to him this year, even last year also. So, yeah. You know, I've really enjoyed playing for him this year.
You got a favorite cheat food on the road?
I'm not too big of a junk food guy, so I don't know. It's usually just the after the game spread, whatever it is, the chicken, the rice, things like that. So I'm not too sure.
So if you guys stop at a 7-Eleven, you're not going gummy bears, no Snickers, no ice cream?
Yeah, I am a big candy person. I like Starburst. I would say that's the go-to. yeah, I usually always have to have one candy on a road trip.
Right. I mean, come on. We going pink, we going yellow, we going orange, we going everything.
Yeah, it has to be pink. Pink's the best color.
Pink is the best star. How is that possible that color can change the flavor? Have you ever thought deep about why the pink is the best? These are the conversations I have with myself.
You know, I really try not to think too much about it. I think, I don't know, I've always loved the pink. I wish that they made an all pink roll of Starburst, but hopefully one day they will.
I think they do, but they're very hard to find.
Wow.
I'm not exactly
sure.
Yeah,
I gotta fix that.
All right. Hey, I appreciate the time. I know it's game day and all that, so thanks for waking up and getting on here. Just one last thing. Do you still lay out your uniform before game day? Do you still massage the glove with the oil? Do you do, like, is that a ritual for you?
I mean, I try to get my uniform on early. I try to do all the same stuff that I can. So, yeah, I mean, I still have the same pre-game routines and all that, I would say.
So Madrigal's at the park in his uniform 4 hours before game time, and guys are rolling in their sweatpants. Is that an accurate portrayal?
You know, it might have changed a little bit. There's different timings and things like that. We got to do weightlifting. We got to, you know, stretch and do all that stuff. So it's changed a little bit now that you say that. But, yeah, I try to keep the same ones I've had for the most part.
Well, hey, man, you it worked for you. You know, number 4 overall draft pick, you're on your way to the major leagues. I don't think you need to change a thing, Nick, from my seat. And there we go, Nick Madrigal, who definitely did say, you're exactly right, Carm. I don't need to change a thing. Talked to Nick earlier today. Not sure why that part got snipped out. Probably was my fault. I apologize for that, Curtis. But how awesome a kid, right? And if anybody can text in right now, 312-981-7200, how do they make the pink Starburst taste so good? And everybody would say that pink is the best. Like, that is a hands down, everybody loves the pink. Yellow is too tart. Orange is like a little bit too sweet and orangey somehow. Red is like for some reason it's boring. But the pink, it just pops every time. Curtis, you have thoughts on this?
Vivian sitting next to me here waiting to produce for Amy Guth is in total agreement with you.
Right, I mean, everybody is. I
text though, 630 says yellow Starburst all the way.
It's too lemony. It's too bitter. But okay. I mean, I think Pink is, if we had a vote here, put it up on the Twitter poll, Curtis. We don't have that on the show, but if we did, you put it up on the Twitter poll. Is Pink the best Starburst? All right, coming on back here, there's a sweet batting practice opportunity at Guaranteed Rate Field that I want to tell you about. We'll do that next on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN, with you till the top of the hour. Amy Guth warming up in the bullpen. There is a cool event coming up here. Little home run derby action going on. One of the proud sponsors of the White Sox, of course, is Guaranteed Rate. And Frank Thomas is going to be a part of this home run derby. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You get to meet Frank, you hang out in the visitor's clubhouse, you get to go to the BP, you get your very own walk-up song, you get to put your name on the scoreboard. The chief growth officer for Guaranteed Rate is Scott Steven. He's also the biggest White Sox fan I know, and calls me every day to tell me how amazing the White Sox are at every single moment, even when things aren't going particularly well. Scott, welcome to WGN, my friend. How are you?
Good. Have I told you lately how good the White Sox are going to be and how well they're doing this year?
On the hour, every hour, sir. No, I believe I appreciate your positivity. So does Jerry Reinsdorf. So does Brooks Boyer. So does Rick Hahn, Ricky Renteria, all the way on down. But you're not here just to tell us what we already know. You're here to tell us about this home run derby and how fans can get involved, because people want to hit home runs, they want to take BP, and they want to meet Frank Thomas, Scott Steven.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool event. And the coolest thing is that you can do all this on Guaranteed Rate Field. So we set up a tournament of 15 teams at an entrance fee of $5,000 a team for a four-man or four-woman team to go head-to-head against 14 other man or woman team at Guaranteed Rate Field trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And now, they'll be accompanied by Frank Thomas, who will give them both tips and, you know, be the grandmaster of the day.
And, okay, so you're looking for 60 total participants. We got 15 15 teams of four, excuse me.
Yes, 15 teams of four.
Okay, now $5,000 is not nothing here, Scott Stevens. So you have any recommendation on how you got to go out and find the big shooters in your life who want to sponsor you, right? That's the strategy.
Absolutely, but it's not the $5,000, it's the experience. If you've ever had the opportunity to take batting practice on any major league field, it is something that you really can't anticipate what the level of awe it is when you walk up to that home plate and have a bat and swing that bat.
Right.
It's worth $10,000. It's worth $15,000. So get three of your friends, get $5,000 together, or get your company, and certainly get a team together and get out there, because it will be a lot of fun. We'll have uniforms. We'll have food. We'll have photos at home plate. You'll get your own walk-up music. It will be quite the event that you'll never forget.
Round one, each participant gets 10 swings against the pitching machine. Top 12 participants move forward. Round two, of those 12, you each get 8 swings, and then the top two will move forward. And then the championship round, you both get 10 swings. Can you get the ball to the infield, by the way?
Can I?
Yes.
I've actually played on that field, and I was 2 for 3. And I played in the field at short, and I was 7 for 8, and my one error was a throwing error.
Okay. You can't get the ball anywhere.
No, I did. I got out of the infield. I did. I got it short left field, but that was about as far as I could get it.
Okay. Well, do we have a date on this event?
Yes, it's August 7th, and I think this will go fast for so. Please, if you're interested, you can call, you can call me directly at 312-543-5263. That's 312-543-5263, and just say you're interested in the Guaranteed Rate Station Home Run Derby with Frank Thomas.
Is there a website also? It's assuming you don't want to get all these calls, might be.
You know what?
Yeah,
I'll take the calls because I'll handle them. Handle them with a level of customer service that $5,000 warrants.
Okay. Look at you. 312-543-5263. Get yourself involved. Scott, Sox are going to win, what, 12 in a row starting tomorrow?
I'm hoping. Yep. You know, you got you wake up every day hoping and thinking that. So one of these days that's going to happen.
Yep, absolutely. One more with the Astros, with the Twins tomorrow, and then the Royals coming in. All right, awesome event. August 7th from 2:30 in the afternoon to 6 in the evening at Guaranteed Rate Field, looking for 15 teams of four, a mere $5,000. $5,000 divided by four, that's $1,250. Who's not walking around with $1,250 in the pocket to go over to Guaranteed Rate Field and hit bombs? That's like $12.50, the experience, you know, if you do some form of math that I'm trying to figure out. Appreciate you, Scott.
Appreciate you, and go White Sox.
Go White Sox, absolutely.
Remember, next World Series championship will come from the South Side, my man.
Hey, I've been saying it too. I absolutely appreciate you. Scott Steven, Chief.
Take care.
Yep, Chief Growth Officer, Guaranteed Rate. Getting an event coming up August 7th at Guaranteed Rate Field. All right, quick timeout. Amy Guth coming up. This is White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.